past the humanist rebirth. We have the ultimate human rebirth that is the most advantageous for the
humanist rebirth. I love this example from the liberation of the human life. It's the massive entitlement to the human liberation. So this is the thing that this is saying. This is saying the formation of self from the shared individual again.
Unscheduled. I didn't let any of the liaisons know. I just decided to come and join. And I'll be doing that in the next few days, most likely. The London on weekdays is scheduled to finish at 10:30. So today around 10:15, I'm going to open up my blog post. It will be on the screen. And I'm going to go to the part where I have blog post on a short biography of Paul Mukherjee. So I want to share that with you, a short biography of Paul Mukherjee. So you have a little more background on who actually spoke of this text. Okay? Again, I had mentioned earlier, and I'll mention it again, I'll mention it throughout because there are some new people here. During retreat, before you start, please do not make it a mindless reading of a novel or a magazine. You are reading the most definitive text, condensed teachings of Lord Buddha. That if you go into retreat with this text and you meditate on it, you can gain very high mental accomplishments. You can gain very high mental states of achievement. That's very, very important to know. Okay? So this text, if you do not study prior to more higher practices, you will not gain any attendance. So in the future, when I share the secrets of Vajrayani's practice with people who are lucky enough to receive, you have to have a strong grounding and lamrim. So if your lamrim grounding is very strong, when you do tantric practices, you will see a difference in your mind. You will see a difference in you, and you will see a difference in your surroundings. Because tantric practices have tremendous power, tremendous blessings, tremendous, transformational abilities. And the good thing about the temple teachings is that they are still alive, the lineage is still alive, they have not died. What does it mean when it dies? It means that the last holder of the tantric teachings had died. And then 2-3 generations later, people find some Dharma texts and they start meditating on it. We won't have any effect because the lineage is not. Okay? So today we're still living among the time where there are masters in the world holding the lineage in their mind, practicing, doing the practice, and it's keeping it alive to pass through people. So we're very fortunate. I was very fortunate. So therefore, if we want to do any of the higher practices, we have to practice the Lamrim very well. The Lamrim are not little teachings. They're not basic teachings. They're all the Buddha's teachings combined into one. Okay? So you don't do tantric practices or tantric teachings in order to transform. You've got to transform it into something now. Hence, because this text, as I said earlier, is the condensation of 84,000 teachings of Buddha. Remember when I gave you the Lamrim opening day teachings? On the Lamrim opening day teachings, I was here and I explained to all of you. Buddha gave teachings for 40 years, 41 years. And in those 41 years, he gave 84,000 sets of teachings. Those teachings, when condensed, is 108 volumes. The volumes are very big. And we have them in the monasteries. When you condense those one more time into something more today, it is this book. The most definitive book. So therefore, when we practice this book, our hands should be clean. We should wear respectful clothes. We should do our best not to come to the Gomba in shorts. Because you're coming for a spiritual retreat, you're not coming for a holiday by the beach. You should come in long pants, covered, and loose and comfortable. You don't have to come dressed in a suit and tie. You come in long pants to show respect. And you should come in clothes that are decent and very comfortable. And when you sit through the teachings, as I said earlier many times, we should never sit in a manner that we're reading a novel. A magazine. Why? You're reading a very powerful book. If you have doubts about this book, if you are not sure about this book, if you are in confusion about this book, it is not the fault of the book or what we're teaching. It is from your side not having enough knowledge to appreciate. Example, when we want to go on a certain health regime, when people first tell us, we're very skeptical. We sit there with our hands folded, and we're very skeptical. But when they explain to us more and more and more, our hands kind of go like that, and go, oh, that sounds very good. Similarly, anything in life, in the beginning, we're quite skeptical, and we need to check it out, and we need to know what's going on. Therefore, as we read this book, and we know the contents, we have to be dressed very respectfully, and the reason for that is the book will not be disrespected. It is a sense of instilling discipline in us. It's a sense of instilling a sense of respect in us. When we have respect, and we have discipline, and everybody around us will look up to us. And if we have something to say, people will listen to us. We can't win people over by being arrogant. We can't win people over by giving them unclear answers. We can't win people over by holding on to the past or being angry. We can't win people over by money. We can't win people over by being beautiful. We can only win them over if we have knowledge. We are stable. We are firm. And we show a body language that is disciplined. If we are not disciplined, it shows that whatever we're practicing has no effect. So that's very, very important to know. Okay? Let's find it later because it's quite distracting, please. Thanks. Now, when we recite the Lamrim, we should focus on what we're reading. And we should recite at a volume that we can hear ourselves. It's very important to hear it, because by hearing it, you plant imprints in your mind. By hearing it, you plant the words of an enlightened being in your mind. When, let me explain this part. When you plant visually, verbally, or by thought, an imprint in your mind, it is exactly as the English word, imprint. It is imprinted into you. When that imprint is in you, it takes a future trigger to open. For example, if you walk by and I say to you, Paboka, Paboka Rinchi, if you walk by and I say, Manjushri, if you walk by and I say, Om Mani Padme Hum, I planted something in your mind. If you walk by and I flash a picture of the Buddha to you, or we have a Buddha outside, people drive by, they see the Buddha, they like, they don't like, they don't like, an imprint visually has been planted. If I say the mantra of the Buddha, the sound has been planted. Then if I say to you, hey, Buddha is very compassionate, and if you practice the Buddha's teachings, you will be able to gain a lot of forgiveness and let go of the past and become a very easy person that people will like. Then you go, oh, really? That's a thought. So I can implant in you a thought, a sound, Om Mani Padme Hum, or a visual, a Buddha image. Why not implant something visual in you? Visual, thought, or sound in you, it's implanted in your mind stream. You see, because all of us have a mind stream. Shema. The mind stream is continuous. The mind stream continues our whole life. As we're very young, we have that mind. As we get older, we have that mind. When we become mature, we have that mind. When we become very old, we have that mind. When we die, we have that mind. When we finally, we're finally dead, the mind, we have that mind, and it leaves the body. And then it enters the Bardo, and it enters the next body. When it enters the next body, it's that mind that we carry over. And then the next life, same thing, young, mature, old, die. And then, again, the mind leaves that body, and it continues. Well, you see, that mind has the imprint of Pabongka, has the imprint of Om Mani Padme Hum, has the imprint of Shakyamuni, and it carries it every lifetime. So even in your next life, if you never ever see a teacher, you never come across the Dharma, you never come across anything, nothing at all, but the imprint is still with you. The imprint could have been put into you 1,000 years ago. Maybe Shakyamuni was teaching, and you were on the outskirts. Maybe you were a bird that flew over and saw Shakyamuni. The imprint of visual of Shakyamuni is in your mind. Maybe you were an insect that was stepped on by one of the Sangha and killed. The imprint in you, stepped on by Sangha. Maybe someone in the village said, Buddha Shakyamuni is giving teachings. He said, oh, I don't have time. I have to go and get water from the river. I have to make food for my husband. I have to make food. I have to go work in the field for my wife. You know, that could have been happening. But Buddha Shakyamuni, the imprint is your mind. So that imprint is in your mind. That karmic imprint never, ever goes away. Similarly, if you drink all day alcohol, drink and drink and drink and drink and drink, and you womanize and womanize and womanize, and you get one woman, hurt their feelings, get another woman, hurt their feelings, or you promise to do something, you break your promise, you do something else, you break your promise, you promise something else, you break your promise, and you disappoint people all the time, that imprint is in you also. And that imprint won't go away. So whatever you are experiencing and feeling now, do you find it difficult to commit? Do you find it difficult to practice? Do you find it difficult to understand? Do you find it difficult to comprehend? Whatever difficulties you are having is an opening of an imprint from a previous time. So if you're still making imprints now, you don't want to imprint yourself with more negative things. Why? Because if you're always breaking your promise, always disappointing people, you imprint that in you. You imprint that in you and you make it stronger and stronger. So you can have 500 imprints of breaking promises in you. Then the next time someone asks you to do something and you want to and you know it's good and it's for a good cause and you can do it, somehow along the way, You don't give up. You give up. You say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I just can't do it. And you can cry and feel guilty. What is that? That's one of your imprints opening up. And the trigger was someone asked you to do it and you like it. Does everybody understand that? So what happens is, the horrible thing is, you keep making more imprints with the previous imprint. So when the imprint opens, it makes you react a certain way that you have done in the past. And then when you react that way like you did in the past, you create another imprint to act like that again in the future. It's a vicious cycle. That's called samsara. That's called cyclic existence. C-Y-C-L-I-C. Cyclic existence. Cyclic existence is external and internal. That's the internal cyclic existence. That's the internal wheel of life. So therefore, if you're used to not accomplishing anything, taking money, living easy, getting angry, telling people off, every time you tell someone off, every time you make excuses for your failure, every time you don't accomplish something, you put more imprints to do the same in the future. Where did that come from? From the past. So that's why you see people who are chronic failures, chronic excuse makers, chronic laziness, chronic, and they're very skillful, eloquent on telling you why they cannot or will not or could not do it. Are they bad people? They're not bad people, but they will become bad people. Why? Who will respect a person who never keeps their promises? They're not a bad person, but they will become one. So therefore, the horrible thing is, it's not just an imprint. It is also, two things happen. One is, when you imprint it enough, you just stay that way. And you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And there will come a time when you can't come out anymore. No matter how much love and care and advice and wisdom you get, you will not come out of the habit. You will be stuck, you will remain that way. Example, a person who becomes an alcoholic, they know they can't come out anymore, most of the time. Someone who takes rebirth as an animal, or in the realm of the ghosts, spirits, you're already a ghost, no matter what you teach him, whatever Buddha you show them, you just put imprints, but nothing happens. Nothing at all. So therefore, what's important for us is, while we have the opportunity, as Kevin Pomoka here says, having a precious human body to be able to practice Dharma is worth more than thousands and thousands, tens and thousands of wish-fulfilling jewels. Because a wish-fulfilling jewel can take care of your everyday needs. But that's it. But if you have a precious human body, and you practice the Dharma, it can take care of your daily needs, and all your problems in your future lives are finished. So having a precious human body and using it 100% to practice the Dharma to benefit others is worth more than 10,000 wish-fulfilling jewels. And if you think about the analogy, it makes total sense. It makes total sense. Therefore, what we want to do is what we recite the Lama, or imprinting Buddha's teachings of the Lama from A to Z. In fact, it's too short. If we do more imprint, it's even better. When we recite it, and we sit straight, and we're disciplined, and we're respectful, we're creating discipline, respect, and faith towards something very holy. So you're not dressing in full length, in pants, and covering yourself because you're afraid other people will be offended. It's more respect towards something very high. So if you wear shorts and read the Lama, is it bad karma? No. But you see, you're letting your mind say, well, let me make myself totally comfortable. You know, what's Dharma practicing? What's spiritual practicing? If you just don't change anything about yourself, if you don't transform anything about yourself and you want to do everything on your own terms, that's not spiritual practice. That's just you reading a book. So the purpose of you not wearing shorts or sitting in a weird angle or sitting in a weird position is not that if you sit in a weird position and you wear shorts and you read the Lama, you're going to go to hell. No. but it just becomes reading a book. So it's not different than any other activity that you do. It's not a condemnation, it's more of a discipline thing for yourself. For yourself. So now, when you plant these imprints in your mind, they remain in your mind until they overcome. So what we call these bad imprints is bacha. Bacha. Some of us find it very difficult to get along with people. And if we continue to make it difficult to get along with people, you make more imprints that you will eventually not get along with even yourself. Some of us make imprints that we never have time for Dharma. The meeting, the business, the money, fun is always more important. Every time you do that, you make imprints that you will never have time for Dharma. And when I say, I'm saying in relation to Dharma, but I'm saying it everywhere. If you're at home and you're not nice to your wife, if you're not nice to your kids, you're not nice to your husband, you're not nice to your parents, you're not nice to your neighbors, those are imprints too. And those imprints stay with you. Those imprints stay with you. Imprints never go away until they are triggered and open up and you experience them. Once you experience the imprint, good or bad, it leads you to your next step. If you experience a negative imprint, if it's strong enough, it can pull you down. If you experience a positive imprint, it can pull you up. Example. Very simple example. There are monks who practice very well. They meditate very well. And they make their minds very strong. And they're very focused and they're very committed to their Dharma practice and benefiting others. So when they go to the village, when they go to the city, and they see lots of beautiful girls walking back and forth, they're not distracted at all. Nothing happens. Same thing for the nuns. But there are monks and nuns that don't practice well. There are a few. When they go to the village, when they go to the city, when they see beautiful girls and boys walking by, their eyes follow. It opens up something. And they go back to the monastery, instead of thinking of the text, they think of the beautiful girl. They think of the beautiful boy, for nuns. And then they go back to the village again, and then they see it again, they go, oh, that's very nice. And then they go back to the monastery, instead of thinking about renunciation and Dharma texts and practices, they start thinking, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we're going to have that girl? Maybe I can have a family. Oh, I'm not getting anywhere with my Dharma practice. Why don't I just get married? Why don't I have some kids? If I have some kids, maybe I can send one to the monastery, and that would be better than if I stay in the monastery. I mean, all kinds of thoughts come, because why? The imprint is opening up. Having a girl and marrying is not bad, but it is if you're a monk. I mean, why take the vows of a monk if you're going to do that? I'm not criticizing. Having a wife and family is not bad. Okay? So, if normally you get money and you do business and you fail and you make excuses and you cover, then the next time you make business, you fail, you want more money, you cover, then you make business, you fail, you cover. Pretty much anger comes, you start explaining why, you have nothing to show for. And the next time you get some money, you do some business, you fail again, you know what happens? It triggers the last 10 times you fail. And then when it opens up, you make more excuses why you fail. And you cover with more negative karma by making excuses and excuses. So what we want to do is this. What we want to do is not run away from samsara, run away to a cave, run away to somewhere distant and far away. What we want to do is to face our mind here. Less distracting for both of us once they walk by. I notice when I talk with people walking around with their looks at them, and don't look at me, and I don't like that. I like when they look at me. Maybe we can come up the stairs that way instead. Okay, now, imprints. It's called bhakcha. Can be visual, verbal, or thought. During higher tantric initiations, A lot of imprints and permission is granted to you to meditate by thought. That means the Lama will generate himself as Yamataka or Vajrayana and generate the mind of all encompassing bodhicitta. And then he will explain to you what bodhicitta is, and you think it together with the Lama. By thinking it together, you receive initiation by thought meditation. And then in the future, when you do Vajrayana's mantra, you do the same meditation. You will open up, it will trigger both. Okay, now, so what's important is, how do we battle imprints? Because we've done it so many times. How do we battle imprints? We battle imprints by facing them and not giving in to them. How do we battle imprints? By collecting metal. How do we battle imprints? By purifying karma. You see, the sad thing is this. This is the scariest part of imprints. The scariest part of imprints is they also are attached to this little thing called karma. So if you're in the habit of justification and making up and covering for your mistakes, that itself was an imprint. Along with that comes karma for deceiving the other person, for hurting the other person, for damaging the other person. Along that comes karma. And the karma reinforces the imprints. Some people say, hey, I'm not lying anymore. After 20 years of lying, I'm not lying. Oh, 20 years of harassing my mother, harassing my father, harassing my friends. I'm not doing it anymore. That's wonderful. But you see, if you've been doing it for 20 years, there's 20 years of accumulated karma. You may have stopped, but the 20 years of karma is still there. That's why even if you have stopped, you'll find it hard to still live up because the karma will drag you down. If you've been womanizing for 20 years, you may have stopped. But it doesn't mean you're safe. Because in 20 years of womanizing, the karma is still there. People you've hurt or deceived. So people tend to forget that. That, hey, I take a vow, I take refuge, and I'm a Buddhist now, and I'm safe. No. You see, this book, karma applies to anybody in any religion. You can accept any universal God, any universal spirit, any universal deity out there, and you'll be fine from now on. Fine from now on, but all the things you did before that doesn't get wiped away. Nobody can die for you and take away your sins. If they can die for you and take away your sins, then we're all sinless. We'll be perfect. Then everybody who takes refuge in this supreme being, in the place that they take refuge, there should be zero disasters, zero problems. Why? Because there's no sin to come back and get you. So it doesn't make sense. Just by accepting everything is fine. It's illogical. Now, when you meet the Lamrim, you are dressing and singing and acting in a disciplined manner, not because you'll collect negative karma. If you don't, note, the temple is for you to gain discipline. The church here, this is a Buddhist church. The church, the temple here is for you to gain discipline. For you to get a sense of a higher purpose of living. For you to get a sense of higher knowledge, higher understanding, and to lead a better person each time. That's the purpose of this church, of any church. You don't go to the church, come here and sing Lamrim, Lamrim, Lamrim hymns, and you go back and everything's fine and you don't change yourself. Okay, you may be fine and sane because you accepted something very high. But if you keep acting the way you are, you're still harming everybody else who hasn't accepted. Doesn't make sense, huh? So therefore, what's an imprint? An imprint is anything that your five aggregates. Perceives. Condensed to three forms of imprints: visual, thought, sound. All three comes from five aggregates that we have. So therefore, at this level, we're going to keep slipping. That's why some people say, oh, you've been in Dharma for 5, 6 years, you're still like that. Yes. Why like that? Because they have years and years of imprints they haven't changed. And those of us who don't want to change our imprints, we don't have a very good future. You don't have an assured future. You do not have a safe future. And if you sit there, as Habakkuk says, thinking everything will be fine, he said it in the same words, it's self-deception. It's the highest form of self-deception. To know what you're doing wrong, to continue doing it, and not do anything about it, and not be exuberant in doing something. That is the highest form of self-deception. Why? In this life, you use your precious human body for the causes to take rebirth in the three lower levels. We've got to stop looking at ourselves now to say how safe we are, because what we are now is totally deception of how what things can happen for us in the future. You may think, well, I have a great family. You know, I have money, I have inheritance, or I have a good job, I have a good husband, I have a good wife. You know, I've got some money in the bank, and everything's safe and fine. Well, you read my blog post for J.K. Rowling. She is not talking on a religious level at all. She's one of the biggest, richest person on this planet, one of the most successful person on this planet overnight. And J.K. Rowling herself said, in a non-religious, non-denominational setting, that if you think money, position, power, and what you have is going to be a safeguard or is going to be a security against all the adversities and fears and difficulties in life, you are fooling yourself. And that's exactly what Habakkuk is saying. Incredible. Habakkuk and Rowling are saying the same thing. I guess wisdom is wisdom. So what Habakkuk is saying is that if you think you looking at yourself now that, hey, I'm healthy, I'm all right. Well, you're not going to stay healthy. As you get older, you become more unhealthy. Hey, I'm young. You're not going to stay young. If you're going to stay young, then there should be no old people in this room. Hey, I'm going to get food and I'm going to be all right. Well, look, if one situation in your life is pulled away, you may not have money to get food. Hey, I've got a good job. Maybe. See, nothing in your life you have truly gives you security.
So when we realize that, instead of sitting there in our room getting agoraphobia, we can't go outside because we're so scared because the llama scared us to death and we can never do anything again. We're so insecure. In fact, we should go the opposite direction, knowing that everything is so insecure. Let go. Let go of your ego. Let go of your projections. Let go of how you think things should be. And adopt what Buddha is teaching you in the long run. And practice. If you adopt what the Buddha is teaching you and you practice, there's no way you can go wrong. Okay, because you know why you can't go wrong? Because it's not Buddha taking your karma away, it's you doing it yourself. That will give you the real security. You know what gives you security? Listen carefully. What gives you security is letting go of security. You know what gives you security? Is letting go of what you perceive as security. That's what's going to give you real security. And if you're going to sit here comfortable, all of us, not just you, and I'm not being accusational, I'm saying in general, if you're going to sit here and do nothing about your situation and just potter along and just think everything's fine, you'll be a very sad and disappointed person. Do you know why? You have no security. None of you. What happens if your husband dies? What happens if you die? Every single day we read in the paper someone dies. Why not you? And then what happens? Then everything you were worried about doesn't matter anymore. You think you're right? If you're so right, you should be praised and admired, and everybody should think you're great. If you're so right and people avoid you, they don't like you, they don't like your black face, they don't like the way you react towards them, then you're wrong. Right or wrong is in results. Not your justifications and your eloquent explanation of why you do things the way you do. Right or wrong is your results. So if you have no results or very little results, then you're wrong. And no matter what words you say, the other person will stay quiet, not because you're right, because they're tired of fighting with you. And then what's the point? You see, you can win people over because you're very good in talking, you're more stronger, you can shout louder, you can say more things. Doesn't mean you're right, just means they're tired of you. Just let you talk. So when you're reading the Lamrim, There are a few reasons, but the main reason we read it audible is to plant imprints of sound in our mind. What kind of sound? Not Madonna singing her latest. That doesn't implant nothing in you. But of Buddha's pure speech, you are implanting in you. And when you implant that, let's say you read the Lamrim 5, 6, 7 times during the retreat, you're planting the whole corpus of Buddha's teachings in your mind 5, 6 times. And one day, something will trigger it. Let me give you an idea. One day, maybe your Lama, maybe when the Lama's talking right now, you're thinking, yeah, that sounds good, whatever. And I agree. Okay, good. And then you go back, you're exactly the way you are. Then nothing triggered. Why doesn't it trigger? Now let me explain. You have the imprint, something there to trigger, doesn't trigger, lack of merit. Lack of merits. So even someone's in Dharma for 6, 7 years, they're around an incarnation of a Buddha, they're around high teachings, and the Buddha incarnation gave them so much, they can still go away or disappear. Why? They don't collect merit. You say, but they donated, they helped, they prostrated, they prayed. That doesn't collect merit. It depends on their motivation. If the motivation was to get something in their life good for them bad, then they got their motivation wrong. It doesn't collect merit. So even when you talk about Dharma, it doesn't open up. Does everybody understand that? So even if you plant the seeds of Dharma in you, and there's a trigger point, why doesn't it open? Why am I, you stay still kind of complacent, if I can use that word? Why do you still stay complacent? Because you don't have the merit. Even if you do 10 million Tsongkhapa mantras, it doesn't necessarily mean you have the merit. Merit is dependent on motivation. So if you've been reciting Tsongkhapa's mantras, so you get a relationship, you have a good life, you have fun, your boyfriend doesn't leave you, your wife doesn't leave you, and that's why you do the motivation, well, that's what you're going to get back. They probably won't leave you immediately. But you won't get anything else, and you wasted it. Motivation creates the merits. So therefore, you can be walking in Bodh Gaya and you see someone prostrating. You can freeze. The imprint of Lamrim opens up because you see someone doing Dharma action. And then all the things that you read comes back to you. All the things you've heard come back to you, and you really sit in your room and go, oh my God, I've got to change. I've got to transform. That's when you know it opened. If you sit through a Dharma talk, read through Dharma teachings, go through years of Dharma, and you're still stone cold, it's a lack of merit. If you're still not transforming, it's a lack of merit. And the sad thing is, in our lack of merit, we collect more demerit. Nothing stays still. We collect more demerit. Now, while we collect these imprints, we can go for a Dharma talk. Something can open up. We can read a Dharma book. Something opens up. We can see Sangha walking by. We'll offer some food. Something can open up. We can be involved in cleaning the Dharma center. Many people gain realizations in a monastery when they clean up the prayer hall. Very advanced monks, and I'm talking about advanced monks, they strive to go clean up the prayer hall, or clean the center, or clean the gomba, or clean something related. Here, when you clean up, they consider you low class. In Buddhism, when you clean up, it's high class. Do you know why? If you have the good luck and fortune to clean this gomba every day from your heart, religiously, very carefully, with the correct motivation, how many people will use this gomba for the Dharma? How many people do you avoid to get sicknesses? How many people do you make it pleasant for? So when you make the environment pleasant for them to do Dharma, they do more Dharma, and they gain more merits, they gain more imprints because of you. Then that purifies your karma. So that's the philosophy behind serving a temple, serving a church, serving a place of worship, serving a center. When you donate to the center, when you help or clean or you volunteer, you never should show up like you're doing them a favor, because you're not. They're doing you a favor. Why are they doing you a favor? Because they got this all together so you can come and serve. You do it. You get it together. You find the funds. You build. You teach. You make everything organized. And then we see. If you cannot do it, you should rejoice that there's a place there to do it. So if you can clean, If you can clean, if you can wash, if you can polish, and while you're doing it, you recite a mantra called Du Pong Jima Pong or Om Benza Satwa Hong, is very powerful to purify negative karma. Very, very powerful. And if we can work for our lama, if we can clean our lama's items, our root guru's items, which I have done, it's even more meritorious because the lama is the one that gives us dharma directly. If we had an opportunity to be near our dharma, to work or to buy or to do, to acquire or do whatever for our lama, we should do it 100% from our heart with no disappointments. If we lost that chance, too bad. Too bad. So therefore, if we can vacuum, if we can clean, if we can wash, if we can serve, we can help the center, it's very beautiful. See here, here in this region, it's very hard to get volunteers for most places. It's very hard to get people to commit. You know why? Because they don't know the value of Dharma and how purification comes about. But people who know, they will jump to the center. They will run to the center to do something. They'll go and volunteer. They'll go and help. And in fact, if you try to kick them out, they get very upset. They want to do it. People who don't know always try to avoid work. Always try to avoid responsibility in the center. Why? They don't know the value of taking care of the center. That is the truth. Have you been in your whole life just involved with relationships, money, sex, fun, doing business, lying, drinking? Have you been involved mostly with that your whole life? If you've been involved with that most of your life, those actions do not bring happy results. You need to purify intensely. If you want to purify, the best way to purify is to serve a place of practice. Even the monks in the monastery will fight, the good ones will fight to clean and sweep. I used to do it, to the prayer hall, to sweep, and hoping the Sangha will step on what they have swept on, swept and cleaned. They will fight to clean the windows, clean the walls. They'll fight to prune the grass and the flowers because they know it benefits. They will fight to plant things to make it beautiful, to decorate the temple. One puja for business success, listen carefully, that's in my divination text. I don't give people around here because they think it's a trick. They think, ah, yeah, he's just trying to get donations. La. It's not. One, I'm going to give you a little Tibetan divination secret. One secret under the section of business success. Yes, people ask me, will I be successful in this endeavor or not? Usually I don't want to tell them and I discourage them to ask. Why? I don't want to be a fortune teller from Hong Kong. All right, so one of the secrets that the pujas come out for people who want to do business, they want to be successful, is you know what? Giving as much as you can to decorate a temple. That's right. Decorating a temple. Gomba Genja Puba is one of the most powerful ways to expedite success in our business. Do you know what decoration of a temple means? Painting the walls. Hiring people to keep it clean. Putting up banners. Changing these things from year to year. So there's new ones all the time. Rebrocading the tankas when necessary. Renovating. Changing the silks on the thrones. Changing the chairs, new carpets, anything that makes a place of worship more beautiful, more captivating, is a puja. And the karma that directly comes back to you is to make your business better. Imagine, businessmen will come here and say, oh, if you donate and help the temple look better, your business will go up. You say, oh, this monk very sneaky and smart. That's why I don't tell people that one. But if you don't believe me, I can show you my divination text. It is in English. One of the best ways to make your business more and more successful is to decorate a temple. Literally. And then on top of Tibetan temples, here we can do also, they put victory banners. They put metal, gold-plated victory banners on the four corners. And then in front of the temple, you have the Dharma Chakra wheel. You have the two deers, male and female. That's a decorative piece. So here, when we have festivals, to put lanterns up, to offer flowers, even offering flowers as often as we can, at every opportunity. Oh, it's 10 days before a Kichara's anniversary. Let me offer flowers. 10 days before. Any opportunity you have. Why? Even decorating flowers is considered helping decorating a temple. Even if you sponsor an altar, if you sponsor, you see those pearls? Do you know why I put those pearls there? To trick you into collecting merit. So your finances will be better. You see, in Chinese temples, what they do is they offer candles, don't they? They sell candles, they offer. Well, we can't burn a lot of candles here because we're enclosed. And I don't want to have a burning house with smoke and soot. I like things clean and perfect. In fact, I'm going for an inspection after this. I like things perfect and clean and pristine. So we can't offer candles. I give people an opportunity to buy pearls. When you take the pearls, you think like this. Whatever is in the King of Prayers, I offer this and may it come true. You offer it to Vajrayani, etc. Every time you come, you should offer. Even if it's one bit. Why? If you die, you can take that merit with you. It's an imprint. You can't take your money with you, but you can take that imprint with you. See, when I say this to people who don't understand, they say it's a trick. It's not. I don't trick people. That's why Tibetan Buddhas are very ornamented, very bejeweled, very becrusted, and the offering items are silver or gold. It's based on that philosophy. In fact, many people in Tibet, they'll leave in their wills, when I die, please take that money and make a gold butter lamp and offer it to that temple. And then the butter lamp will be offered every single day to help them take good rebirth. One of the best ways to make our business better or make Tsowa Yumba. Tsowa means the necessities of life. Not just money, huh? The necessities of life. Some people don't have a lot of money, but everything they need come. One of the best ways to make the necessities of life come forth is to decorate a temple. Imagine if you decorate a temple, you have that kind of benefit. Imagine if you actually sponsor a temple. If you sponsor an altar, sponsor a part of it. You sponsor with $10,000, $1,000. You spend 10 cents. If you're a little kid, same thing, motivation. Imagine if you sponsor a temple. That's the basis that it comes from. So therefore, what's very important is imprints. When we plant positive imprints by, in this case, what you're all doing is beautiful. You're doing two imprints. One is by thought, because you're listening to yourselves. The second is by sound. You're planting the sound of Dharma in you. If you collect merit by doing certain practices I've taught in the past, senior students will know, then those imprints open and open and open and open. That's why sometimes you see over the years some students get better, some stay the same, some even go away. After a few years, you'll see who was really sincere. You will see. And the ones that are sincere, they go away. They think they're having a good time. They think everything's fine. But you know what? Death is going to hit them, and then that's it. So therefore, whenever you feel disappointed or sad or not sure, I want you to do this meditation taught in all of Buddhism, all countries. I want you to do your meditation on death. I want you to lay down in a dark room, semi-lit, or sit up in a dark room. Better sit and visualize your breath stopping. Don't stop your breath. Visualize your breath stopping. Visualize the liquid in your body becoming dry. You can't open your eyes anymore. Visualize your mouth cannot move anymore. And then visualize your heart stopping. Don't make it stop. Just visualize it stopping in your imagination. Visualize the blood stop flowing. Visualize the heat from your body leaving. Visualize your body becoming cold, becoming hard, cannot move. And then visualize your body starting to smell. Has anyone smelled rotten meat? That's what your body is. Visualize your body rotting away. And visualize the layers of skin going off. Visualize all your blood dried up. All your internal organs bloating up. Visualize. Because you know why you visualize that? That's what's going to happen to you and everybody that you love. And you and I can never stop that. Visualize your body, your internal organs bloating up, the smell, rotting. Visualize. And then visualize all the things that you own going to this person, going to that person. They took it away. That's gone. The insurance is gone. Your house is gone. Your hair is gone. Visualize your business, people take it over, your kids gone, everybody gone, and you're completely alone. Visualize that until you are very scared and frightened. Do that every day till you are so scared that you will transform. In the southern form of Buddhism in Thailand, they make you do that meditation in front of bones in the temple. That's why Thai temples, they keep a lot of bones. A lot of bones. Sometimes they make you meditate in front of skulls. In the northern tradition, in Tibetan Buddhism, they make you go to a cemetery and meditate on the same thing. Same meditation, but different place due to culture. If you say you don't want to meditate on that, it's too gory. It's not gory. You are avoiding your truth. It's not gory. The meditation is not designed to scare you in itself. The meditation is designed to make you wake up to what will happen to you. Do you know when I was 14 and 12, 11 years old, I used to do this meditation every day. All the time. That's why I became a monk. I'm not trying to scare you for fear in itself. I'm trying to wake you up. Face your reality. Face your reality. When my mother was very difficult with me, I visualized myself dying and her dying. I didn't wish her for her to die, no. I visualized her dying, and when she died and she's rotten, then whatever she said to me doesn't matter anymore. So why should it bother me now? It's going to happen like that, so let it go. I said, let it go. I never wish for her to die, no. I dare not. That's what you should do. If you're serious Lamrimpas, Lamrimpas are people who practice Lamrim seriously. If you're serious Lamrimpas, you should do the meditation on death every single day. And if you're scared, it's great. And if you transform, then I can teach you the next chapter. If you're so scared with that meditation that you start keeping your appointments, keeping your promises, being kind, forgiving, being humble, you win. You win. Not your teacher, not anybody else, you win. Because you went that advanced in your meditation. If you don't do it now, you're going to have to do it in another life. You say, oh, I'll do it in another life. How do you know you're going to get another life that's conducive? This life is barely conducive for you to do Dharma. Look at all the problems you make for yourself. This life is barely conducive for you to do Dharma. You think next life you can do it? Why do you think next life it'll be conducive if you do Dharma if you don't create the causes of this life to be conducive? Think about it like that. Okay? Where's the printout? Thank you. Please look on the screen. I was going to, after Lamrim retreat every night, I was going to give you a little story of different mahasiddhas. I picked one, but I decided to do this one instead. Everybody likes, say, bedtime story. So this is your bedtime story while I tuck you in. All right? Pabongka Rinpoche, De Chingningbo. Pabongka Rinpoche is his title because he was thought to be the abbot of Pabongka Monastery, a small monastery, a small retreat. So Pabongka Rinpoche means the abbot incarnate of Pabongka. That's how he's got his name, Pabongka. It's Pabongka. De Chingningbo is his actual name. That's the name that his teacher gave him. Example, my title name is Tem Rinpoche, because I come from the monastery of Tem Monastery. So I'm Tem Rinpoche. I'm the Rinpoche of Tem Monastery. Tem, again, means teeth. Because in our monastery, we had a shrine that had Tsongkhapa's teeth. It was a very big relic. Many people will come to worship Tsongkhapa's teeth because it's a relic. It's holy. So I'm the Rinpoche of Tem Monastery, the temple of the tooth. Okay, so when you're calling me precious teeth. Every time you say Tem Rinpoche, it means precious teeth. And I didn't say precious dentures, I said precious teeth. Okay? That's one. So my ordination name from Dalai Lama is Tenzin Sopa. So my name would be Tem Rinpoche Tenzin Sopa. Just like this one, Pabongka Rinpoche De Chingningbo. And my recognition name is Yunden Gyatso. So my full name is Tem Rinpoche Tenzin Sopa Yunden Gyatso. Of course, if you all had to call me that all day long, you'd have a lot of imprints. Too long. Okay? Pabongka Rimchi De Chingdingpo Jamba Tenzin Chinle Gyatso was one of the greatest masters of the 20th century and one of the most influential teachers in Tibet. He had acquired the teachings from Sakya and Nyingma from the lineages of Ganden Tenzin and Munchu Dhammapada and collected over other valuable teachings from various venerated sources during his lifetime. So Pabongka Rimchi wasn't known as a scholar, but what he did was he took teachings from the Nyingma, he took teachings from the Sakya, he took teachings from a very, very advanced practitioner called Ganden Tenzin and Munchu Dhammapada, and he combined these teachings and he taught these during his lifetime. In 1959, when many Tibetans departed Tibet, Pamukkha knew that he would not be able to leave. Therefore, he actually transmitted all these important teachings to a single heart disciple, Trigyen Rinpoche, who became the tutor of the 14th Dalai Lama. In this way, all the transmissions could then be secured, passed on to His Holiness, as well as other high Gelugpa Lamas. This became the living foundation of the Gelugpa lineage we have today. So Pabongka knew when they left in 59, he can't go, he will die soon. So instead of having all the teachings he had wasted, he passed it all to his heart disciples, principally Trigyen Rinpoche. So Trigyen Rinpoche received hundreds and hundreds of teachings from Pabongka. And Trigyen Rinpoche, when he came out of Tibet, he taught it for 30, 40, 50 years. And then that's how we got it from our teachers from Trigyen Rinpoche. Okay? That's a little background so you know more. Pabongka was born north of Lhasa in a town called Tsawa Li in Yerungshang district of the state of Tsang. Okay? His family was part of the nobility and had owned a modest estate called Chapel Gershi. They were of a small family, very modest, not rich at all. Okay? They had a small estate. It is said that on the night that Pabongka Rinpoche was born, a light shone in a room and people outside the house had a vision of the protector of the roof. So on the day he was born, the night, from his room, people can see bright lights come out. They didn't have electricity. Bright lights come out, and on the roof of his house, they saw Pabongka Rinpoche's personal Dharma protector appear. Okay? As a child, he has already exhibited unusual qualities and thus was taken before Shapa Rinpoche. Shapa Chöche Losan Dage, one of the leading religious figures of the day. Later on, he was found to be a reincarnation of the Changya line, which included the well-known scholar Changya Roba Dorji. The lamas of this line had done much teaching in the regions of Mongolia and China, including in the court of China, Chinese emperor himself, and be the royal tutor of the emperors. The Dalai Lama must have been this lama is highly attained. The regal position has enabled him to accomplish a great deal for Tibetan Buddhism institutions in China, Mongolia, and Tibet. Changa Roba Dorji was also the student of the 7th Dalai Lama and teacher of the 8th. He was an important lineage holder in several adept traditions of Father and Mother Tantra. What is that saying? I'm reading it fast because I'm going to explain to you. What is it saying? That when he was very young, a toddler, he exhibited signs of reciting Dharma texts, of wanting to do rituals, of meditating, wanting to wear robes. He exhibited very unusual signs as a young child that people knew that his imprints from his previous life was very strong. Because we repeat our imprints. Okay? And so they brought him to Shapa Chöche Rinpoche. Shapa Chöche was a leading religious figure in his day. And Shapa Chöche recognized him as Changya Roba Dorji. Who is Changya Roba Dorji? Changya is a corrupted Chinese word. The original is Chinese, but the Tibetans cannot pronounce it well, so it became corrupted. It sounds like Changya. What it is originally, nobody knows now. But it was a title given to Pabongka's previous life as the imperial tutor to the emperor of all China. So Pabongka's previous life was the root guru of the Chinese emperor. So the Chinese emperor being such a great personality and having power over so many kingdoms and scholars and masters will not pick just any lama to tutor him. So Pabongka came from a line of lamas who were the emperor's own tutors. Okay? And with his position as Changya Rinpoche, he was able to bring Buddhism to many parts of China and Mongolia. The Pabongka line of tukuls have very strong connections to China. Each incarnation likes Chinese brocades, likes Chinese music, likes Chinese food, likes Chinese culture. And let me let you in on a little secret. The current Pabongka Rimchi is about 30 plus years old, and he's living in China right now. He left India. He lived in Tibet. He left Tibet. He's living in China now. And he travels in China teaching right now as we speak. So every incarnation always somehow find their way back to China. Nobody tells them to. Okay? I know what you guys are thinking. Too bad we can't switch Temerinji for that one. Too late. No refunds. No. And he was also the teachers and the students of the line of Dalai Lamas. And on top of that, he's an important lineage holder of father and mother tantras, which is Yamataka, Buyusamata, Hiruka. However, the name Changkhya had strong Chinese connotations. As the Tibetan government, where people were already sensitive to the pressures put on them from China, the name Changkhya was ruled out and the boy was declared Pabongka. So during the time where he was recognized, he couldn't take his name Changkhya. Do you know why? Because China and Tibet at that time were having some disputes. So to name him Changkhya would not be a politically good move. I'll give you an example. Right now in Malaysia, if you were to name me, oh, I can't say, it's quite political. Okay, I better not. Okay, it wasn't politically correct to call him Changkhya at that time, so they had to give him a substitute name. They couldn't give him his real name, so they called him Pabongka, which was very low ranking. Because if he got the name Changkhya, his throne would be very high. The emperor of China would invite him again. He would have great wealth, great ladrangs, a lot of students. But he couldn't get that name, so he got a very low-ranking name. But he still made himself very great in his life. There was a small monastery atop the rock named Pabong. Hence, he was eventually recognized and thrown as a late abbot of that monastery, Pabong Monastery. For this reason, Rinpoche is documented as the second Pabongka and was sometimes referred to as Pabongka Kentru. That means the first one was his previous life, the second one is Kentru. Kentru means what? Ken is abbot, Tru is incarnation. So abbot incarnation of Pabongka Monastery. But actually, it's not his second. He's had many incarnations already. Does everybody understand that? All right? It is commonly believed that he was also the reincarnation of Tsakho Ngawan Trakwa, one of the main disciples of Lama Tsongkhapa and the founder of Daesung. He's also one of the main disciples of Lama Tsongkhapa. Okay? It was Shapa Cheche Losang Rinpoche who foretold that if the boy was placed in Gyarong House of Ceremony, something wonderful would happen with him in the future. So this High Lama Shapa Cheche, who recognized him, predicted, if this boy is enthroned, the robes are put on him, and he's put in the monastery, he will grow up to be something very powerful and beneficial. Shapa Cheche predicted. Shapa Cheche didn't live to see it, but he predicted it. Now, I'm going to read this part, then we're done. We can't do the whole thing tonight. This is on my blog. I blogged a few months ago. Pabongka Rimji's full name was Kepchi Pabongka Jesun Jamba Densin Chinle Gyatso Pe Sangbo. Sounds like Malay royalty, huh? Very long name. Which means the Lord, Protector, the one for Pabongka, the Venerable and Glorious Master whose name is the Loving One, Keeper of the Buddha's teachings, Ocean and Mighty Deeds of the Buddha. Thank God we don't have to call him by his English name. He was also affectionately known as Deqing Ningpo. So we can call him Kepje Deqing Ningpo. Which translates into the essence of great bliss. Deqing Ningpo means the essence of great bliss. The king of great bliss from the bliss palace, palace of bliss. Meaning a high attained being who has already won with Hiruka. So people call him Deqing Ningpo because Pabongka Rinpoche has become one with the tantric deity Hiruka and Vajrayogini. So when you see Pabongka, you are not looking at a normal lama. You're looking at a tantric deity in human form. I talked to this one Rinpoche in Sarah. He's much older than me, and he's very renowned. He's an abbot now. Very humble. Every single day, he would circumambulate in the monastery. He would circumambulate around Pabongka Rinpoche's house because it's his guru. He told me himself. He said that Pabongka at that time was probably, you know, about 16, 17, 18 years old. The current one. And he was circumambulating around the house, and he stopped and looked at the window. He saw Pabongka Rinpoche in the window, and he folded his hands. Then he looked away, he looked again. He said, in the place of Pabongka, he saw a red lady. A lady was red, crimson colored, long black hair. And he was thinking, hey, what's a lady doing in his room? Then he looked again, it was Pabongka again. he told me himself. I said, Rinpoche, what does that mean? He says, I think Paul Bunker manifested who he is to me. I said, what does that mean? He says, I saw Paul Bunker who he is. He's Vajragini. He's Hiruka. Because Vajragini and Hiruka are one. This Rinpoche himself told me. This Rinpoche now is in his late 50s, early 60s. He says, I saw Paul Bunker as a red lady. And then he switched back to a monk. He saw with his own eyes. I have no doubts because this Rinpoche who told me is very holy. All right? So when they tell you these stories, I have people who can corroborate. You might think, well, they're just stories. Well, look, people can be witnesses and put people in jail or death sentence. Or people can swing the jury's decision just by an eyewitness. Well, why not eyewitness for this? Okay? He was an extraordinary master for the Hiruka Body Mandala and the Vajrayogini practice. And he had special responsibility for the Mother Tantra. There is a famous story of how Hiruka actually appeared to Pabongka when he visited Chimburi in Tibet, where there is an image of Hiruka. This is where the Blood Drinker's Mountain are, and his name refers to Hiruka the Blood Drinker. Why do we refer Hiruka as Blood Drinker? Blood is considered the fountainhead of our body, of our life. Without blood, we cannot survive. So Hiruka the Drinker of Blood is one that drinks the blood of your body that contaminates you. So he drinks your blood, replaces you into great bliss, into nectar. Okay? But in Hiruka's practice, there's no blood offerings. There's no blood sacrifices. There's no animal sacrifices. There's no blood involved at all. Okay, so you don't need to freak out. Later when we practice Vajragini Hawa, we have to offer our husbands up. I know some of you would like to offer your husbands up, but no. There is no such ceremony in Tibetan Buddhism, certainly. So when I say Hiruka Vajragini, see, Vajragini is Hiruka in female form. Hiruka is Vajragini in male form. Why do I put the female form? Because she has two arms, one face, easier. The male form has 12 arms, too many things for you guys to meditate. You're already complicated. All right? Now, when many times when Pabongka travels, he travels with the entourage. And whenever he comes upon a Hiruka statue, many people will see nectar coming from Hiruka's mouth. White liquid, and people will catch it and make pills from it to eat to heal their bodies. Wherever he goes, people always see Hiruka emitting something from the mouth. Okay? When he first went there, this image spoke to him. So in this case, when he went to Chimburi, that statue of Hiruka actually spoke to him with witnesses. It opened its mouth, and a tremendous amount of nectar came out. Pabongka collected the nectar from the mouth of Hiruka while in the presence of 60 to 70 witnesses. This nectar was then made into the nectar pill. The Gelugpa current nectar pills originate from there. So in these days, the Gelugpa lamas have this special nectar that they use to bless people. Okay, it's very powerful nectar to bless people. This one comes from Pabongka. Okay, so this is very, very powerful stuff. If you know how to use it. Of course, I'm not going to tell you, then I won't have any more business. So you guys have to stick around if you want to learn more about this. I'm going to cover it up so you guys can't see it. Mystery wins the day. It also stated that in the very same cave in Chimburi, where Pabongka received the nectar from the Hiruka image, was the place where Hiruka promised the following. So when he came to Chimburi, Hiruka spoke, nectars came out, and Hiruka made a prediction to Pabongka. From now on, for the next 7 generations, whoever practices my teachings, I will protect and help them. That is why Pabongka is also considered a living Hiruka. Many people receive the Hiruka Body Mandala teachings from him. And if you happen to fall within the 7 generation category, you are indeed very blessed. It is said that you will attain attainments much faster. Okay? Why am I going over this? Because he's the author of what we are reading. If you know how great the author is, you will have even more faith. If you're good little Dharma students, and I think most of you are, I would go home and read this blog post. You just go to my blog and you type in the search area, Pabongka, this will come out. And you should read the story tonight, part of it tomorrow, so at least the last thing you went to bed was something good. And you should learn this biography very well, share it with others, so that when they study the Lamrim, they will have more faith. Okay? I'm going to leave it for tonight, because it's late. We did a wonderful Lamrim recitation, and we did have little teachings and little explanation, and I'm very happy about that. And I wish all of you good night. Let's do a Lamrim dedication, please. Your normal dedication. Think that you're all receiving a blessing and he's your representative. Think you're receiving Pabongka Rinpoche's direct blessing today. Is it a good time? Think you're receiving Pabongka's blessing. Come up. May all of you realize Lamrim, have long life, happiness. May all of you be free from your past that was negative, and may positive and auspicious increase in all of you, and may you all be protected always. Tomorrow we'll pick another lucky person for the nectar. If I was to give you all the nectar tonight, I'd be run out. So I'm not going to run out tonight. So let's see who's a good little Lamrim practitioner tomorrow. That's if I'm here. It's all chance. I never announce when I'm coming. It's all chance. It's more fun that way. I like to give you surprises, but I don't like surprises. I know, contradictory, isn't it? Have a good evening. Remember all that I've shared with all of you. Please remember. And tomorrow, please remember when you recite with sound audible to yourself. Why? If you're going to read it anyway, plant more imprints in your mind. When you hear the sound, what kind of imprint is it? Anybody speak English? Sound. When you are given a dharma and you understand the concept, what kind of imprint is that? Correct. If you see an image of a Buddha or a Sangha or a High Lama or a bodhisattva, what kind of imprint is that? Yes. And imprints open when? Not a trick question. Imprints open when? Louder. Huh? Tomorrow I'm going to teach the tone that you gave me answers in. Without the microphone. When do imprints open? Trigger. Triggered by what? By you at the butcher shop watching a goat be butchered so you can have a nice din-din? How is it triggered? By a similar action. So if you plant Lamrim in you in the future, if a lama says Lamrim or talks about Lamrim or doing something related to Lamrim, it triggers it open. It triggered by something similar. That's why laziness is triggered by laziness. Virtue is triggered by virtue. The trigger is always something similar to the imprint. Please remember that key word. The imprint is triggered by something similar. So if your previous life was a person who really likes to make offerings to the Sangha, in this life when you see people making offerings to the Sangha, will you be triggered? Or if you see someone stealing from the temple, your imprint will be triggered. Which one? Making offerings. So in your previous life, if you're lazy and you break your commitments and you like to not keep your promises, in this life, were you triggered by people who keep their promises or triggered by people who don't keep their promises? It's similar. So every day of your life, you sit there arrogantly with a black face, you don't smile, you're not friendly to people. Next life, what will you be triggered by? Same thing. In this life, you do your best to be kind to people, to do the best you can with people, and to give yourself to others. In your next life, you'll be triggered by the same thing. That's why it doesn't matter what religion you are. I'm sure the very great Saint Mother Teresa, wherever she's reincarnated, will be triggered by the same thing again. I'm sure we'll hear about her again in the future. So you'll be triggered by the same thing. That's why it's important to do the same thing again and again and again. Whatever habits doesn't benefit you, cut it out. Whatever habits benefit you, do more. Very important. And remember, whatever commitments you have broken builds up. Especially people who have received initiation If you've broken your samaya and you've broken your commitment and broken your vows, and you keep it broken, you will create the karma not to meet your lama again. That will be the direct karma. You will not meet your lama in this life and future lives. Even if you're near the lama, you won't be able to understand anything or cooperate. You can be near the lama, but not be with the lama at all. So if you've taken initiation in the past, and you've broken your commitments, and you leave it broken, that will be the highest result. You'll be away from the lama, any lama, always. Okay? Keeping commitments is very important. So those imprints are very, very important. That's why do dharma work. Be involved in the different departments. Do work that benefits others. Make dharma a priority. If you make dharma a priority, you are doing yourself the biggest favor you can ever do in this lifetime. You will set the best example for your children. You will be dedicating merits to people that you love that have passed away or still alive. Okay, please remember that. I'm not making this up. This is all in dharma. Good night, everybody. Have a good rest.